You could take a dart and throw it at a globe, and almost anywhere you hit, as long as you hit land, I could pretty well guarantee you there needs to be ministry that takes place there. We have a long ways to go in fulfilling the Great Commission. There's still a whole lot of people on this planet that have yet to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. But there's a couple of places on my heart, and I just want to share them with you today. Out of all of the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of places you could go, that I've been praying that God would raise up some people here from this school to maybe help plug some needs that exist around the world. One of them is in the country of Denmark. Western Europe is still a great mission field of the world. You know, when the wall came down, there were more Christians in Eastern Europe than there was in Western Europe. Western Europe is still very secular, still very much a needy place to be reached. And one of the places that had been largely neglected, in fact, in my unofficial, unscientific opinion, Denmark is probably the neediest and most neglected country in Western Europe. According to the Mission Handbook, which lists all the American missionaries that are in any countries around the world, there was about six or eight listed there, and as we started tracking them all down, we could find two, and they weren't even Americans. They were Danish people that were working for child evangelism. And so, to my knowledge right now, there's no Americans working, and I realize God uses other countries to meet needs that exist around the world, but we have a couple right now that are just about ready to go, but we're desperately looking for team members for them. We'd love to see dozens of people go into that country. The country of Denmark, it'll be tough. It's incredibly secular, very expensive, a hard language to learn. But if you don't want an easy road, there's a place for you to go. And I'd love to chat with you and see if maybe we can get some folk that would impact that country, a very secular and needy place. Another place that we're trying to find co-workers for a couple that's already raising support is the country, or not the country, but the city of Boston, Massachusetts. We're aiming at some downtown work there among a lot of the internationals and some of the academics that are there, and we really need co-workers to come and join that team there. So if any one of those sort of grabs your attention, I would love to be able to chat with you. I want to talk a little bit this morning about the subject of evangelism. That's what really missions does. We as an organization just help to get missionaries from here to there. And we serve churches that want to get missionaries from here to there. And if you have a desire to get somewhere and your church wants to send you there, we can help facilitate that. We work in about 40 different countries around the world. If you want to sort of check us out, there's our website. I also blog a bit. And if you want to check out my blog, I'm writing on missions subject. If you're interested on missions, you'll find it there. You can also track me down by the same name with Facebook or Twitter if you want to connect in that way. If we can be of service to you and be of help to you, we'd like to do that. And as we think in terms of the Great Commission, the starting point, obviously, has to be evangelism. And as we think about evangelism, and as I've studied evangelism, as I've researched this among missionaries all over the world, and as I've tried to inventory my own success and failures in evangelism, there's one kind of evangelism that just stands out head and shoulders above every other kind as far as effectiveness. No matter where you are in the world, no matter what culture you're in, no matter what you do, plain old everyday personal one-on-one evangelism by far exceeds any other strategy that we can come up with. And I appreciate the programs that we have and the strategies that we have and the technology that we have and all this kind of stuff. But let me assure you that way above anything that comes in number two is just nothing more than plain old everyday one-on-one evangelism. So I want to encourage you in that direction this morning. Jim Peterson wrote a book called Living Proof, and in his introduction to that book, he writes the following. In 1963, my family traveled by ship from the United States to Brazil. The trip marked a new beginning. We expected that. We did not expect that the 16 days aboard ship would in themselves mark a beginning of discoveries that are still going on. There were 120 passengers on this ship. Half were tourists, half were missionaries, including us. 60 missionaries and 60 tourists. With a one-to-one ratio for 16 days, there isn't much to do above on board other than to walk and read and converse. I couldn't imagine how any tourist could get through that trip without receiving a thorough exposure to the Christian message. More ideal conditions for evangelism did not exist. Well, during my first 3 days, my wife and I spent our time relating to other passengers, conversing with conversations were unhurried. We soon found ourselves deeply involved in discussing Christ with our new acquaintances. And on the third day, that we thought that if the other 58 missionaries were doing what we were doing, we'd soon have a serious case of overkill. So we decided to check with the others about coordinating our efforts. Our first opportunity came when we encountered six missionaries sitting together on the deck, and I joined them, expressed my concern, suggesting that we get our signals straight so that we would not overwhelm the passengers. I had totally misjudged the problem. When I explained what was on my mind, the six just sort of looked at one another. Apparently, it hadn't occurred to them to talk to the other 60 passengers about Christ. And finally, one of them said, "We just graduated from seminary and didn't learn how to do that sort of thing there." The other said, "I don't know. I sort of have a built-in reservation about this kind of the idea of conversion." The third said, "I've been a pastor for 3 years and I've never personally evangelized anyone. I don't think I would know how either." I remember saying that if we in 16 days with a one-to-one ratio couldn't awaken these 60 people to the gospel, we might as well forget the 95 million Brazilians. Perhaps it would be better that we just catch the next boat going north. Well, the next, a few hours later, a knock came on my cabin door, and three of the six who I'd been talking to were there, and he goes on to describe how these guys had approached the captain to say, "Could we have a church service for the sailors?" And of course, they had seen these sailors who never are in church on Sunday, and they decided to organize that for them, and they did that. But Jim Peterson goes on to talk to these people and say, "You know, just by organizing a service for the sailors, who seem to be unfortunate because they don't have a church service, we can't walk away from the other 60 passengers who are lost." Well, they got the point, but they'd already committed themselves to conducting that service, and they had the service. Well, after that, my three friends began to think in terms of going to the other tourists. There was an elderly Christian couple among the passengers, and it was the husband's birthday, so the three missionaries organized an old-fashioned sing to commemorate the occasion. And sensing what was coming and not wanting to jeopardize my relationship with the other people I was getting to know, I felt it wiser to stay away. And when the time came for the program, I was up on the third deck. Down below, you could hear the old songs. Now, remember, this is in the 60s, so these are songs you guys probably never heard of. But they were started to sing Swanee River in My Old Kentucky Home, and then it was Rock of Ages, another hymn, and a pause. And so it went, hymns, then testimonies, and finally a message. And when it was over, my three friends were euphoric. They had succeeded in preaching to virtually all the passengers, and naturally they called another sing for two nights later. Once again, I went up to the third deck, but this time there were 60 other tourists with me. They weren't about to get caught twice. And later, as I reflected upon those 16 days aboard ship, it occurred to me that this situation represented a microcosm of the church and the world. Traditional methods and activities that are meaningful to us are not effective in reaching the world around us, and subsequent years of adapting to a new culture and language for the sake of the gospel have confirmed that realization. We are comfortable with ourselves. But we have to come to the realization that the people that are lost don't necessarily like coming to church. There's really nothing that's attractive to them about that. And the things that we are most comfortable with are not things that lost people are going to be comfortable with. We're going to have to maybe shift our thinking a little bit in our evangelism. And if all of our evangelism is related to inviting people to come to us, we're going to severely leave a lot of opportunity on the table. Now, I come before you this morning not as a gifted evangelist. There are some people that seem to be really gifted in this area, and everybody they talk to gets saved. Well, that's not me. I struggle in this area. I'm a learner, and I work at this diligently all the time. And so I don't claim to be, though I'm involved in missions, a gifted evangelist, and I'm gifted in some other areas, but this is an area that I have a responsibility for, and I've been learning for many, many years to try to be more and more effective in this area of evangelism. And so as I come to you this morning, I don't come to you as a great expert, but I want to share with you some of the lessons that God has been teaching me in this area of evangelism. And to frame our thinking this morning, I want us to go to Luke chapter 19 and take a look at a story that all of you are really familiar with, the story of Zacchaeus. You know the story well. And in this story, there are basically three different players or three different characters that we're going to look at. The first is Zacchaeus in the first four verses. Then in verses 5 and 6, we're going to take a look at Jesus. And then in the verse 7, we're going to take a look at his critics. Verse 1, Luke chapter 19, and he entered into Jericho. This is the Jericho that Joshua, remember, the walls fell down. Well, the city wasn't in exactly the same place, but it's the same city. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. He's 17 miles away from his destination, but the path goes through this city. And there was a man there that was named Zacchaeus, and he was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. Well, here's the reason why he was rich. He was a publican. He was a tax collector. What had happened back then was that Rome had come in and conquered that part of Israel, of the world, and Israel was now paying taxes to Rome. And the way Rome collected taxes was they hired guys like Zacchaeus, who was a Jew, to extract taxes from his fellow countrymen. Now, to add insult to injury, not only was he taking taxes from them, but these taxes were going back to Rome. It'd be sort of like if Canada conquered the United States and they continued to tax us, and all the money that we paid in taxes were not used here in the United States, they were sent north of the border, we would probably be doubly upset with the taxes that we have to pay. That was the case. And to make things worse, Zacchaeus earned his money not only by extracting taxes, by putting a commission on top of that. And so his salary came by levying a commission or adding to whatever Rome wanted from each individual. And so people knew that this was a scam. They knew that this guy was a traitor. They really just didn't like these kinds of guys. They were despicable. They were the rejects of the Jewish society. Well, Zacchaeus, when it says he was a rich man, he was rich. Why? Because not only was he a tax collector, he was a chief. He was the boss. So he had other guys working with him, and so he'd be making a cut on what they made as well. And so Zacchaeus was extremely wealthy. It says he was seeking, verse 3, to see Jesus, but on account of the crowd, he could not because he was small of stature. So he ran ahead, climbed up into a sycamore tree. A sycamore tree was sort of a combination of a mulberry fig. It was actually it produced a fruit, but only poor people ate it. It was not really all that great a fruit. And so it was sort of low-class people that would eat this. And so here's this wealthy guy doing something very undignified, climbing up in a tree to see Jesus because he was too short. There was a crowd of people around Jesus, and with all the commotion, he's trying to see over, and he just can't see Jesus. And so he figures out a plan, and he says, if I'm up there in that tree down the road where the path is going, I'll be able to look down and see Jesus. Now, that's Zacchaeus. Where we really want to get to is to take a look at Jesus, because there's a couple of lessons here that I want us to extract from Jesus' example about the issue of personal evangelism. Let's take a look at Jesus. Verse 5. And Jesus, when he came to that place, he looked up. He said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. Let me draw your attention to a couple of principles from the approach that Jesus takes in evangelism. First of all, Jesus was observant. Now, that's not really complicated to see that, is it? Now, here's the situation. Around Jesus were milling all of these people. There was all this commotion. The dust was flying. Anytime you have a crowd of people, there's a lot of people talking. There's a lot of commotion. People are talking to Jesus. They're wanting to spend some time with him. And all this stuff is flowing around him. And we would certainly understand if Jesus did not notice a guy up in a tree. But Jesus is observant. And he sees opportunity when it is there. You know, some of us have a problem with that issue. I'm one of those guys. I tend to be very project-oriented. I sort of put my head down, barrel forward, and I can ignore everything beside me. The problem is when that translates into our evangelism or into trying to reach people for Christ, we severely limit our possibilities or potential. My first few years on the mission field in South Africa, I worked very closely with, and we're co-workers with Tom Wilson. And Tom is wired totally different from me. Tom is an evangelist. He's very much a people person. So the difference between Tom and me is this. If we had to go down to the 7-Eleven to get a quart of milk, I could be down there and back in about 3.5 minutes. It would take Tom 3.5 hours. And the difference is, on the way down there, he would see opportunity. There would be people to talk to. I could sort of just put the blinders on, get down there and back, and ignore everybody else, but not Tom. And Tom became far more effective in evangelism than I ever was. Why? Because he was like Jesus. He was observant to the opportunities that were out there. And some of us that tend to be very, very project-oriented tend to ignore people because we got to get our projects done. A number of years ago, I drove into our suburb after a day of work. As I drove into our suburb, all the lights were out. Electricity had gone down because of a storm, I guess it was, or something. And all the lights were out. And I'm beginning to mutter and complain because I don't have electricity in my house. And I've got all this stuff I got to do. And I travel a lot. And so when I'm home, time is precious. Got a lot of work I had to do. I still had work that I was bringing home from the office. And without electricity, this wasn't going to happen. And I'm getting frustrated. Why? Because why? I'm project-oriented. And as I'm pulling into my driveway, I notice my neighbor, next-door neighbor, he's out there milling around in his front yard while all the lights are out. And I said hi to my neighbor and started heading out into the house. And I could see he just sort of wanted to talk a little bit. And he started talking about how the electricity had been off. And they'd called, and it's going to be several hours before they get it back on and all the rest of that. And I'm saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm complaining about the fact that I can't get my job done. And Cheeky said, well, you know, we can't cook dinner because we don't have electricity. We're going to go out for dinner. Would you guys just like to go with us? Here's a guy I'm trying to evangelize, inviting me into his life for dinner. And being the good missionary that I am, guess what I said? I excused myself. No, I got work to do. And to my embarrassment today, I missed that opportunity, a guy up a tree, and I walked right past it. Fortunately, his next door neighbor, I've had many opportunities since then, but maybe God shut down the electricity in our suburb that day just for that divine intersection, and I missed it. And I just wonder how many times I've walked right past people up a tree, and the opportunity was there, and I missed it. Some of you guys don't have that problem. You see all these opportunities, and you take advantage of them. But you know, some of us need to follow Jesus and be far more observant of what's happening in our lives. And yes, we've got to get work done. But the work that God has placed us here on this planet to do is to impact the lives of others. And one of the biggest problems that we have in ministry is the ministry itself. And we get so involved in our little world, in our little ministry, that we forget the major ministry that God has left us here on the planet. And I live in this sort of artificial bubble because I work in an office down in Atlanta. Everybody's Christians. And I come to a campus like this. Everybody's Christians. And I go to missions conferences and churches and everyone's Christian. I go to pastors meetings. And I spend my life around all these Christians. It's very easy for me to get so engaged in the ministry that I forget the reason why God has me on this planet. Some of us have to fight against this all the time to keep ourselves from neglecting personal evangelism. Lesson number two, Jesus took the initiative. Not only was he observant, but he took the initiative. Notice, he says to Zacchaeus, come on down, I'm coming to your house. Now, what Jesus had just done was he invited himself for dinner. Now, I don't know whether you've ever done that before. You invited yourself to someone's house for dinner? Normally, we're not quite that bold, are we? And I'm not suggesting you do this. He was Jesus. I mean, you know, God can invite himself anywhere he wants to. But the lesson I think that we ought to take away from this is we probably need to become a little bit more aggressive in our evangelism than what we are. If we're sitting around waiting for people to invite us to give them the gospel, it probably is not going to happen very much. I can only think of one time in my whole life when someone knocked on my door and said, would you give me the gospel? And if we're waiting for people to show up at our church buildings to hear the gospel, we are severely limiting our evangelistic potential. Pizza Hut years ago came up with a model where if you wanted pizza, what you did was you went to their restaurant. And they had a restaurant, tables, sat down, menu, order, they bring it to you. That's how you get pizza. Well, Domino's came along and they had a different model. What is their, they have Domino's here. We had some last night. What is their model? We deliver. Domino says, you tell us where you are and we'll bring it to you. Two different models. And I realize Pizza Hut has adjusted their model since then. You can do either one with Pizza Hut. But keep in mind those two different models. You know, for too long, we have thought in terms of the Pizza Hut model. We have church at 11 o'clock Sunday morning. If you want the gospel, you show up in our restaurant and we'll give it to you then. Otherwise, forget it. May I suggest to you that the model that Jesus is modeling for us here is that we are the Domino's guys. We deliver. We live in Atlanta, Georgia, and one 4th of July, we were downtown watching the fireworks, and we were at the shopping mall, and there were just thousands of people, you know, camped out on blankets and stuff watching the fireworks. And right in the middle of all of that, thousands of people comes along a Domino's pizza guy. Somebody had gotten a cell phone, ordered pizza, and they were delivering pizza. I love the spirit of Domino's. They don't care where you are. You just tell us where you are and we'll bring it to you. Now that is the spirit and that is the heart that God wants in each one of us. Oh, you live in Denmark? We deliver. Oh, you live in the Amazon jungle? We deliver. Oh, we live in China? That's all right. We deliver. And instead of waiting for people to show up here, basically in missions, we have said we're going to take the Domino's pizza model and we're going to deliver it to people wherever they are on this planet. Now, we applaud that in missions. And missionaries are supposed to do that. And we'll pay missionaries to go and do that. But are we doing that right here? If my neighbor wants to get saved, he'll come over and see me. Or are we going to take some steps towards him? Are we going to be as aggressive as Jesus to invite ourselves into people's lives? Or are we going to wait for them to come after us? A guy I've been witnessing to recently, I invited him out to dinner, a lunch. I said, look, I'll buy lunch. Let's get together. I had to make that invitation. I paid for the lunch. As we're talking, I say, look, you know, you really need a spiritual coach. You need someone to help you think through some of these things. How about if we meet together? He's not going to ask me to have a Bible study with him. I've got to take the aggressive posture and suggest that. And so may I suggest to you that as you start thinking through your evangelism, this is not a passive thing. This is something where you start inviting yourself into people's lives. And in a couple of weeks, you're going to be heading home. You're going to have some friends back there that you need to make some very deliberate plans to say, here's what I'm going to do to get into that person's life while I'm home on vacation. I'm going to be proactive. I'm going to be observant as to what God's doing in my life. The people that cross my paths, as well as the people I'm going to deliberately become aggressive with as far as outreach to them. And if we just sit back waiting for this stuff to happen, it doesn't happen all that much. Once in a while, someone shows up in church. Once in a while, someone will knock on your door. But for the most part, if we're not aggressively beating on doors of people's lives, they are not going to open. And so we read of Jesus getting involved with lost people. We know that he was involved in 7 different social events, and probably half of those we would have been a little bit uncomfortable going to. He was certainly got to be a little bit uncomfortable going to this guy's place. Certainly Matthew and his buddies was not an attractive place to be. But one of the problems that we have, those of us that have been saved for a while, is we tend to not have unsaved friends anymore. Jesus did. He was a friend of sinners. I wonder how many people who are lost would call you their friend. Now, you know, once you start thinking this way and once you start acting this way, guess what's going to happen? You're going to be criticized. Look at verse 7. When they saw it, as the group around him, they all grumbled. They murmured. He's gone in to be a guest of a man who is a sinner. Just a couple of chapters earlier in Luke chapter 15, the Pharisees and scribes murmured among themselves saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. Oh. Now we need to realize that God has placed us on planet Earth not to live in isolation from lost people, but we have a responsibility to interject ourselves into their lives. And let me say this very clearly so you don't misunderstand. I'm not suggesting for one moment that you compromise your Christian walk or do things that are wrong according to your convictions or do things that would compromise your testimony. But there are a lot of things that we need to be doing with lost people. But if we don't spend time with lost people, you're not going to win them to Christ. There's a lot of neutral territory. Inviting someone over to your home for a barbecue is good and wholesome. But you see, we're not taking the aggression. We're not planning this and inviting people to either into our lives or into theirs. And like a fireman rushing into a burning building, he insulates himself through his hat and through the coat that he wears because he's going into danger zone. As we go into the world and as we get involved in evangelism, we are walking into a burning building. And we do need to insulate ourselves from that burning. But we can't wait for people to rush out of the burning building. We've got to go in there as part of the rescuers. And we sometimes get criticized for being involved in evangelism this way because we're rubbing shoulders with lost people. And it's a dangerous place to be. It's It's a dangerous place to be on the mission field because you're surrounded by the enemy, by lost people. And they can't infect you, and they can't affect your walk with God. And that's where you've got to walk with God as you're involved in this. But we don't have the luxury of sitting back and waiting, hoping that someone will show up in my life, in my little cloister. I've got to become the aggressor and go out there and somehow connect with people where they are. Someone has said, how can you talk about being Christ-like if you don't know any drunkards, prostitutes, or IRS agents? The first man in history to reach out and voluntarily touch lepers didn't die of leprosy. He died at the hands of those who would not touch a leper. Someone has written this, I was shocked, confused, and bewildered as I entered heaven's door. Not by the beauty of it all, nor the lights of its decor, but it was the folks in heaven who made me sputter and gasp, the thieves and the liars and the sinners, the alcoholics and the trash. There stood the kid from seventh grade who swiped my lunch money twice. Next to him was my old neighbor who never said anything nice. Bob, who I always thought was rotting away in hell, was sitting pretty on cloud nine, looking incredibly well. I nudged Jesus, what's the deal? I'd love to hear your take. How'd all these sinners get up here? God must have made a mistake. And why is everyone so quiet, so somber? Give me a clue. Hush, child. He said, they're all in shock. No one thought they'd be seeing you. You know, who do we think we are? We get saved and we sort of think we're some kind of elite little club here. And the reason why God put us on planet Earth is for the very reason that he said here, today salvation has come to this house. The Son of Man has come to seek and to save. Seek is an active, proactive, aggressive word. To seek and to save those who are lost. May I encourage you not to be passive in the area of evangelism. It takes planning. It takes coming out of our introverted personalities. It takes some aggression on our part. But if we're going to do it like Jesus, we're going to see those opportunities that are there, and we're going to step boldly through the door and take advantage of the opportunities that God has given to us. And we're going to plan ahead and say, what can I do to get into this person's life, and how can I impact them, and how can I start building a relationship with them so that I can deliver the gospel message to them? That's what missionaries do. But the place for you to start practicing to be a missionary is not when you get on an airplane and get off on the other side. The time to practice is right now. In the next couple of weeks, as you're home on vacation, you're going to have that opportunity. May I encourage you? Number one, be looking in trees. Number two, be aggressive. Father, I pray that that would be characteristic of each of us in this room. Forgive us, Father, for just rushing by the opportunities that you land in our path. Help us, Lord, to be observant. Help us to be aggressive. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.